Hey there, agility friend. If you've listened to a few of my podcast episodes, you know that I'm a huge fan of something called growth mindset. You can have access to the best instruction in the world, and you can have the best dog in the world, and the best skills in the world, but if you don't have a solid mindset and approach to the challenges that sport and life are going to toss your way, you're not going to be able to really make the most of all of those bests that you have, you know, best instruction, best dog, best skills, all that stuff. I'm so passionate about the importance of our mindset when it comes to dog agility and really everything in life that I've written an ebook about growth versus fixed mindset, what the hallmarks of those two mindsets are, and how one can really propel you along your agility journey and one may really be holding you back, maybe without you even being aware of it. That ebook is not for sale anywhere, but it is available for free to subscribers of my email list. So if you're curious about what a growth mindset is, what a fixed mindset is, and how to ensure that you've got the right mindset for making the most of your dog agility training and handling journey, head to podcast.theagilitychallenge.com and scroll down till you see the link to subscribe to my email list and get that ebook. It's totally free and it's a game changer. Check it out today at podcast.theagilitychallenge.com. In Daniel Coyle's Little Book of Talent, which is the basis for all of these agility challenge tips, we're now moving into the second category of tips that focuses more on improving skills. The first chunk of tips, 1 through 12, focused on ignition and getting you thinking about deep, purposeful practice. And now, in this next chunk, we're going to really dig into deep, purposeful practice that'll actually help you improve on your dog agility handling and training journey. So in the Little Book of Talent, Daniel Coyle writes that in these talent hotbeds that he visited, and he mentions talent hotbeds a lot in the Little Book of Talent and in the bigger book that the Little Book of Talent was drawn from called The Talent Code, he talks a lot about these things called talent hotbeds that he visited in his quest to figure out what was causing these pockets of talent. And he noticed that people in these talent hotbeds had a different relationship with practicing than people elsewhere. Rather than viewing practice as a necessary drudgery, kind of like eating your vegetables and something necessary for competition, these people in these talent hotbeds, for these people, practice was the game. It was the center of their world and the focus of their daily lives. Now, of course, for most of us, agility is not the focus of our daily lives, but I do think that for many of us, and sometimes myself included, we view training as something that just gets us somewhere rather than the main focus. In the Agility Challenge, my online dog agility training platform, I bring up the topic of deep or purposeful practice again and again and again. I'm like a broken record. And this concept comes up in this context as well, and that's because it works. Deep, purposeful practice is practice that's designed to get you to reach. And what do I mean by that? Reaching is where you stretch yourself slightly beyond your current ability. And this kind of practice where you're reaching, where you stretch yourself slightly beyond your current ability, it's where you spend time in a zone of difficulty that's called the sweet spot. Deep purposeful practice embraces the power of repetition so that actions and behaviors can become fast and automatic. And it requires the development of a practice space that enables you and your dog to reach and repeat and stay engaged and improve skills over time. Now, this brings up a whole other line of thought because you might be watching this or listening to this and thinking, well, my dog can't handle repetition. And that's a problem because if we're trying to teach a learner, whether it's a human or an animal, I mean, I know we're animals, but you know what I mean. If we're trying to teach a behavior and motivate the learner at the same time, then we're coming at this from a really inefficient direction. So, and this is kind of outside the scope of this agility challenge tip, but I want you to think about how can you work separately on motivating your learner, your dog, so that you can engage in that repetition, so that your dog and you can have the opportunity to learn. Because if you can't engage in repetition, it's very difficult to learn a skill and gain fluency where you can do things quickly and automatically. And so when we talk about, oh, my dog can't do repetition, and you're offered workarounds, be aware that that's not really how it works. And in my last tip, I talked about how to find a good coach and a good instructor. If you're with a good coach, or let me back up. If you're with a coach or an instructor that's telling you that you don't have to engage in repetition to get better, that's just not the truth. That's just not the case. There is an amount of repetition that is going to be required for you and your dog to gain fluency. And so you really have to put your time in to working on the fundamentals, not just of skills, but also your skill at motivating a learner. How will you motivate your dog to be able to deal with the level of repetition that's going to be required to get a skill to fluency? So I just don't want to beat around the bush on that. We want our dogs to be motivated learners. We want them to want to engage in the learning process. And if they're opting out or they're not involved in, if they're not motivated to learn, it's going to be very difficult to engage in this deep, purposeful practice that I'm talking about. So it's very possible that either you or your dog, or you and your dog together as a team, aren't ready for the kind of repetition required to gain fluency with agility skills. And if that's the case, you really owe it to the both of you to back up and work specifically on motivating your learner so that you can come to this training with a learner that's motivated. These people in these talent hotbeds that Daniel Coyle is talking about, they're already motivated learners. They're coming with some either internal or external motivation to engage in this deep, purposeful practice, which isn't always fun, but is always challenging. And there's a deep sense of satisfaction that can be gained from overcoming these challenges. And so that's what I always am aiming to instill in my dogs is the, yeah, I really want to engage in this challenge, and the sense of satisfaction that can be gained by overcoming these challenges. Sometimes they're micro challenges, sometimes they're bigger challenges, but there is a fair amount of repetition that is required to get to that level. And because I know that as a trainer, I really want to work hard to make sure that my dog is a motivated learner. I'm already motivated. I'm willing to get up in the morning, in the dark, in the rain. And even when I'm not motivated, I'm going to persist because I know what the payoff is and I'm disciplined. So discipline can be there when motivation flags. And again, that's a whole other topic, the difference between motivation and discipline. So I just want to, as a side note, make sure that it's clear how we as dog trainers have it a little bit different than these people in these talent hotbeds. Because if you're playing an instrument or working on a skill where there's not another creature involved, your motivation is the only motivation that counts, and your discipline is the only discipline that counts, and your engagement in that deep, purposeful practice is the only engagement that counts. But because we're working with our dogs, we have to make sure that those dogs are motivated learners before we can even start to engage in the repetition and the power that is available to us in that repetition, so that actions and behaviors can become fast and automatic. So back to this deep, purposeful practice, this and the practice space that enables you and your dog to reach and repeat and stay engaged and improve skills over time. When I'm talking about space, I'm not just talking about the physical space. I'm also talking about the mental space that you've created for you and your dog. So like I said, in the previous 12 tips, the main focus was getting ready. And the next several tips are going to be all about action, strategies, and techniques to direct you and your dog toward that deep practice and away from the unproductive swamp of shallow practice. And that implies and assumes that you've got a motivated learner. Okay, so when I'm talking about finding the sweet spot, what do I mean? So the sweet spot is that place right on the edge of your ability where you and your dog learn best and fastest. So how do you find this sweet spot? Now, you're going to have to extrapolate a little bit of this. I'm going to talk about people, but extrapolate this towards your dog. So you've got your dog is a motivated learner. What is your sweet spot and what is your dog's sweet spot? So if you're in your comfort zone, you're going to feel a sense of ease and effortlessness. You're working, you might be working up a sweat, but you're not reaching and there's no struggle involved. In the comfort zone, you're going to have a success rate around 80% with the tasks that you're trying to accomplish. And note that even in your comfort zone, there's not an expectation of 100% success. But if you're in the sweet spot, then you're going to feel some frustration or challenge. You're going to feel some difficulty and you're going to be alert to errors. You're fully engaged in the struggle or the challenge as though you're stretching for a nearly unreachable goal, but you're just brushing it with your fingertips. It's right there. You can't quite grab it, but it's right there. It's within arm's reach. You brush it with your fingertips and then you reach again. Your success rate is going to be somewhere between 50 and 80% if you're operating in the sweet spot. And this goes for you and your dog when you're working on new skills. So when you're training your dog, it might be something that you're comfortable with and your dog is in the sweet spot. When you're working on handling, it might be that both of you together as a team are operating in the sweet spot. It might be that you're an experienced handler with a novice dog and you're a little bit in the sweet spot because it's a new dog, but it's more the dog that's in the sweet spot than you. Or it might be like me, I've been around for a long time, but there are a lot of continual challenges as the courses evolve. And so I find that I'm in that sweet spot a lot of the time. The other side of the sweet spot, so we've got the comfort zone and the sweet spot. The other side of the sweet spot is survival zone, the survival zone. And in the survival zone, you're going to feel confused and desperate. And that's not a great place to be. You feel overmatched and overfaced. You feel a sense of scrambling, thrashing around, and guessing. I know you're thinking like me that, yeah, that describes me in lots of situations. That feeling of scrambling, thrashing around, guessing, confusion, overfaced, overmatched, you're in the survival zone. And if you guess right, it's mostly luck. And your success rate in this zone is less than 50%, and it's not a fun place to be. Now, the important thing to really latch on to here is how you feel in each of these zones, because the skills required to get you to a sweet spot or to a survival zone are going to change over time. And something that got you into the survival zone early on, pretty soon is going to be your sweet spot. And then beyond that, it'll be in your comfort zone. So the thing to latch on to is, regardless of the skills, are you in your comfort zone, sweet spot, or survival zone? And that's determined by how you feel and how you behave in that moment. Your sweet spot's going to change over time, like I said, and as your skills evolve and your dog's skills evolve, you have to be alert to not just slipping back into comfort zone by continuously practicing the same skills over and over again. When those skills go from being in your sweet spot to your comfort zone, you got to up your game if you want to keep growing. Now, you may need to get creative to figure out where your sweet spot is so that you can get in the habit of experiencing what it feels like to be in the sweet spot, because that's what you're aiming for, is what it feels like to be in the sweet spot. If you're aiming for to be in your comfort zone all the time, you're going to get comfortable. It's going to be fun, but you're not going to grow. And then the real problem is when you're faced with a challenge that is well beyond your skill level, you're going to be flailing around in survival mode and you don't know what it feels like to practice in the sweet spot. You don't have that experience. It's going to be tough to figure out what it is. You're going to be flailing a lot, and then it's not going to be fun, and you may just walk away. In The Little Book of Talent, Coyle discusses some creative ways that different people in different sports figure out how to get into that sweet spot. So one example he gave was how golfers might work on their swings underwater so that they're slowed down and they can sense and fix mistakes. Some musicians, and this is crazy to me, some musicians play songs backwards so they can get a better sense of the relationship between the notes. The way that you find the sweet spot and work inside of that zone may look a lot different than running a course or running a sequence. But regardless of the method that you choose to figure out what your sweet spot is, how it feels to be in the sweet spot, you want to find ways to stretch yourself, and you want to find ways to stretch your dog so that your dog can continuously be challenged and grow. You really want to play on the edges of your competence. And you really want your dog to be playing on the edge of their competence. And this takes a lot of nuance. So just the act of figuring out how to get a dog into the sweet spot might be very unfamiliar for you and be a skill that you need to work on completely separate from dog agility training and handling. So here's a pretty cool quote. I love this quote. And it's from Albert Einstein. He said, well, apparently, it's hard to know sometimes if these quotes are really attributable. One must develop an instinct for what one can just barely achieve through one's greatest efforts. Such a great quote. And the key word in that quote is barely. So ask yourself, take a moment and ask yourself this. If you tried your absolute hardest, if you really tried, what could you almost do? And if you got your dog to try their hardest, what could your dog almost do? Figure out the boundaries of you and your dog's current abilities. Mark those boundaries and then reach. Aim a little beyond those boundaries, and that is your sweet spot. I hope you enjoyed today's agility challenge tip. Leave a comment below and let me know your thoughts on what your comfort zone feels like, what the sweet spot feels like, and have you ever been in survival mode? I know I have. Just talking about it kind of made me experience that those feelings. Let me know your thoughts, and I will see you guys for the next agility challenge tip next week.
Thanks for joining me on the Agility Challenge podcast with Daisy Peel. If you'd like to take your agility training, handling, and mental game to the next level, check out that ebook that I mentioned at the top of the episode. You can get it for free at podcast.theagilitychallenge.com. It's not for sale anywhere, and it's only available to subscribers of my email list. Getting on board with the right mindset when it comes to your dog agility handling and training challenges is a game changer, so make sure you check it out.